Welcome to the Everyday Ministry Podcast, where ministers get together to discuss everyday ministry.
This is James, and I am sitting here with Jeremy Roden. Jeremy, if you don't mind, just go ahead and introduce yourself.
Yeah, man. I am Jeremy Roden, church planter here in Boaz, Alabama. Been planting about a year and a half now. We've been kind of involved in this. Married to Sydney Roden, been married 5 years this summer. And we have a baby girl named Callie, who is 9 months old, who's been a great addition to our family. And we also have a chocolate lab who will be 5 just in a few weeks now. So we've got a full family, full life, and enjoying ministry here in Boaz.
My wife will love the fact that you introduced your dog to the podcast.
Well, he's been a part of our family for a while now. Almost since Sydney and I got married, he's been hanging around.
Well, I can't tell you what my dog is, but we've had it for about 4 years now. But I can't say what kind of dog it is, so I don't normally introduce her. Well, if you don't mind, just as you said, you know, you're a church planter in Boaz, Alabama. I really was just curious of how you ended up planting a church there. But first, tell us where Boaz, Alabama is, because I'm just going to be honest, I'm not too sure I even know where it's at.
All right, man. Well, I've got this question my entire life when people say, "Where are you from?" You say, "Well, I'm from Boaz." And so I have, there's an answer. It's about halfway between Birmingham and Huntsville. So if you went to Gadsden, you kind of pass through Gadsden on 59. Right when you get past Gadsden, it's just a little bit off the interstate, maybe 10 or 15 minutes off the interstate there. Not much here. People who are in the 40-plus age group know Boaz as the home of all the outlets. There used to be a ton of outlet malls here, but they've kind of all dried up since about 15 years ago. But a lot of older people know Boaz because of that, but we're about halfway between Birmingham and Huntsville.
Okay, awesome. So how did you end up planting a church in Boaz?
All right, man, with a little bit of a story. I started working at Liberty University in 2011, in March 2011. One of the first courses that I developed was an evangelism course in the seminary with Dr. Dave Early. Dr. Dave Early has written several texts. One of them that he wrote is Evangelism Is. He's written some other ones as well. But he was a full-time professor at Liberty, and he had been, at that time, was looking to get a group to go to Las Vegas to plant a church. Since then, that church has been planted. It's Gray City, Vegas. And they've been in Las Vegas, I think, 5 or 6 years, maybe even 7 years. I've lost track of how long ago that was. But in 2011, they were looking to get a group from Lynchburg to go, and they ended up taking about 18 or 20 people. And so Dr. Early had talked with me about possibly joining their team to go to Vegas. And Sydney and I weren't married at the time, but we were about to get married. We were within a year of getting married, and we had talked about it and prayed about it. I was really excited about the possibility of doing that. Planning a church sounded really exciting, but just the timing wasn't right. I just moved to Liberty. I wanted to get my MDiv on campus there. Sydney and I were about to get married. It's been our first year of marriage and church planting. That seemed to kind of stressful to do both of those. But the timing just didn't work right. But Sydney and I stayed in touch with them, and we helped support them for a couple years. But during that time, after they went and planted, about a year into that, I started feeling like God wanted us to plant a church as well. So this still would have been about 5 or 6 years ago from now. And so I was just doing some research one day and looking at what would be some good places or cool places to plant churches. And, you know, everybody in NAM and Southern Baptist life, it's all about these big cities and they're going out west. And I always just felt like that the small towns were getting left behind. Small towns like in Alabama were just getting left in the dust. Everybody's going to Atlanta or Nashville or Vegas or San Diego or all these big towns and out west. And felt like these small towns, particularly in the Southeast, were getting left behind. And so I was doing some research, and I thought planting in Alabama would be kind of cool. And so I was doing some research. I had narrowed it down to maybe 3 potential places, Huntsville being one of them, Mobile being one of them, and then Boaz being one of them. My family's from here, my aunts, uncles, grandparents. My grandmother's the baby of 12. So I have tons of cousins in this area. And so I thought it'd be kind of a cool place. My parents met here, went to high school, all that kind of stuff. Got married in this area. So I thought it'd be kind of a cool spot. So I looked at those three areas, but Mobile was the one that was standing out to me. And so I had me and a buddy of mine, I think you know him, James, Tony Arnold, he and I went down to Mobile and actually met with our director of missions down there and toured some potential areas and potential subdivisions and areas of town to plant a church. And I don't know how into it Tony would have been, but we were thinking about it and praying about it as God was opening the doors, but it just didn't feel right. And it was just, it wasn't a good time. It wasn't a good fit, or something just wasn't quite right. And so I didn't do that. And we went back to Virginia City and I did. And one day I was sitting in my office and my dad's office was just a few doors down from mine. And I went to him. I said, wouldn't it be really cool to plant a church in your hometown in Boaz? And this is still 4 or 5 years ago. And I told him, I was like, that'd be a really cool place. And he's like, yeah, it'd be a good spot. And just kind of, he didn't brush me off, but it was just kind of like, yeah, that's a cool thing. But then it just kind of laid there for a couple of years. Nothing really happened with it. And then things got kicked into high gear. About 3 years ago, I started working from home about 3 years ago for Liberty. So I was working at home and I found out that to stay working at home, they didn't want us in Lynchburg working from home, that it was becoming an issue. Everybody wanting to work from home if they lived in Lynchburg. And so boss said that if you're gonna work from home, you can't live in Lynchburg anymore. It's like, oh man, what are we gonna do? And so we're trying to scrounge around and figure out what the plan was gonna be. And things kind of got kicked into high motion really quick. And I thought, well, we gotta get out of here. So we put our house on the market. We had bought it a couple years prior. We put our house on the market. It sold within 2 weeks. We made about $15,000 profit off of that house. So we like, oh my gosh, like we sold our house quick. We made money on our house. Like God's doing something. Like those kind of things don't just happen. Your boss doesn't say, hey, you can work from home. It doesn't just say, hey, home can't be here. You don't just sell your house in 2 weeks and make good money off of it. Like that doesn't just all randomly happen for no reason. So Sydney and I traveled for about a month, went to Newfoundland and Nova Scotia and just kind of hung out for about a month. Then we came down to Alabama, decided that Boaz would be our spot because our family was here, and thought, you know what, maybe in the future we'll plant a church and see what happens. But we bought our house within about a month of being here. And I mean, it wasn't just a couple weeks. And one of our neighbors came and talked to us. His name's Chuck Conley. He and his wife stopped by and they literally live like four houses down from us in our subdivision and started talking to him. And he's a pastor of a church and ends up being the one who I'm planting this church with now. So within us moving to Alabama, within 6 months, we started planting a church. So, I mean, the Lord kicked it into high gear from 5 years ago, it being a thought, to about a year and a half ago, us actually planting the church. It kind of laid there for a while. But then once it started moving, man, it started moving quick. And so it's just easy to see the Lord moving when you sell your house quick. You're able to find a house that you want quickly. You happen, quote unquote, happen to be a few doors down from the guy you end up planting a church with. It's very interesting to see how God moves and how God works whenever he starts setting things in motion.
Awesome. Yeah, that is a very quick coincidence, isn't it? I've never known many people to sell a house in 2 weeks. And so also, how is it working from home?
Working from home is pretty good. You have to be, to work from home, it takes somebody who's fairly organized or disciplined enough to get everything done without somebody being there. However, I find it much more efficient to work from home. In the office, you always, I mean, you have people that you communicate with and talk to, you make friends in the office. So that kind of kills some of your productivity during the day. Working from home for me has been great, especially now that I have a little one. I'm able to see her all the time. And I have to kind of section myself off sometimes to get the work knocked out. But I do enjoy working from home. It also gives me the freedom to travel when I want to and where I want to. As long as I have internet, I can work from wherever I'm at.
That's awesome. So before you planted the church, what was your ministry experience?
I had spent, my dad, like I said, is in the ministry. My dad now is a professor at Liberty. But before that, he had been a pastor for a long, long time. And so ever since I can remember, my dad's been a pastor. Growing up in high school, went to a couple mission trips, New Hampshire a couple times, with Arizona a couple times. In college, I went to Guatemala for 3 years in a row. And then in my senior year at Huntingdon, I started working as an intern at Frazier United Methodist Church there in Montgomery. Me and Tony were working there as interns. He worked there a couple years. I worked there a year. That was really my first experience with ministry more than just helping out at my dad's church. This was more of a, I had a role there. I had things I had to do, people counting on me type deal. So I did that for a year. And then I was a youth pastor. I've been a youth pastor for 3 years, 1 year at Grace Baptist Church up in Newcastle, which was more just helping out where they needed. It wasn't a paid position. It really wasn't a real structured position, just helping them where they needed. And then I spent 2 years at Trinity Baptist Church in Bedford, Virginia, as their youth pastor there. We had a small youth group there. So I did that for a while. And then I've also been, this is my third year as the character coach at a junior college in our area. So that's been a pretty neat ministry as well.
Wow. I bet that opens up a lot of doors to just minister in different areas than you would if you were just working from home and pastoring a church there. So
it does. It's a really neat opportunity I got there.
Awesome, man. Well, I forgot to ask you this at first, so I guess I'll ask you now. One question we ask everybody on the podcast is, how would you define an everyday minister?
You know, I thought about that question because you sent me some of these, and I thought about that, how I would answer that. And I'll start out with like a story one of my professors told me at Liberty, one of my homiletics professor, Dr. Kevin King. He was saying that probably the best expositor or the best preacher in America is probably in some small town with maybe only 150 people at their church and just dominating his sermons each week, but with no real recognition for it, no national praise for it. And I kind of think that way about an everyday minister. It's somebody that's not in the headlines. They're just plugging away at the mission, growing the kingdom day to day. Kind of like, you know, we use the term average Joe. I kind of think about that as the everyday minister. It's the ministers out there just kind of killing it for the kingdom, but probably only the people in that area know about them. Not somebody that gets a lot of praise, but somebody who's in ministry day in, day out, not just Sunday mornings, but it's kind of in the trenches. I've seen that lived out in my life with my dad, just getting those calls at 11 o'clock at night that sister so-and-so is in the hospital. Can you come pray over her? Or so-and-so died. Can you come talk to their family? And just how that's, it's every day, day in, day out. You're a minister, not just on Sunday mornings, but it's every day.
Man, I couldn't agree with the answer more, especially the aspect of, you know, that person no one ever will ever hear of unless they're in the congregation or in that community with them. And I love that idea that your professor said, that one of the best expositors could be that guy that no one will ever hear. And man, that's what I think about with everyday ministry. Everyday minister is that person that's faithfully serving each day to fulfill the calling that God has for him. And that's one reason I started this podcast, because I think there's a lot of pastors out there that they may find themselves that they need that encouragement that they may not get on a regular basis. So that's what we want to do with this podcast.
And I think, man, that like it's easier now, I guess, with social media, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, all this stuff. We see pastors like Matt Chandler, Francis Chan, Alistair Begg, like all these like big time guys that are incredible expositors, incredible preachers. But I think the bulk of the ministry being done out there isn't by those top 10 preachers out there. I mean, it's done by guys that are in the trenches day in and day out. And I bet you some of those guys have been preaching 30 years, 30, 40 years, or just delivering sermon after sermon that is awesome. And maybe only 150 people are hearing them each week, but it's really making a difference for the kingdom.
Yeah. And I, you know, kind of like you talked about in the beginning, when you're telling us the story of how you started the church in Boaz, I think one issue that we have is a lot of times when we see church planning or even people going to churches and serve as pastors, they want that large church or that church in the middle of the city. They don't really get to these small towns in Alabama or around the world. And but that's the normative church now. Most churches are that 150 and less. And I don't think they get enough attention sometimes. So,
and I think it's a good church planning model, personally. That's not one of the questions on here, but what I think it's a great church planning model is planning smaller churches in smaller towns, because I'm in a rural setting, and these people aren't ever moving to the city to go to some big mega church. Like, it's not happening. These people are staying in small towns like Boaz and Abbeville and Geraldine and Fife, these areas around here. That church is probably never going to be more than 100 people, but it can be a very faithful group. And I think that church plant, even small in scale, can be very large in impact in these areas.
I agree completely. That's how my church is also, man. We're, we're 30 minutes from a decent sized city and an hour and a half from a larger city. And so most of the people that live here, this is where they're from, and they're embedded in here. And then a lot of the people that we reach in the community are those that, for whatever reason, if it's good reasons or bad reasons, they don't like a large church. They want to be involved and be a part. And so, man, I think that even though we see a resurgence of it, I think that so often in the past, in the history, especially in the Southern Baptist Convention, they haven't focused on that small church. Because like you said, most of the time when we go to these events or anything like that, what we hear is these big name guys that are, mm-hmm. Have churches of thousands rather than those regular guys in ministry serving day in, day out. But nothing against big churches, man. God uses them in amazing ways, just like he does little churches. But I think the little ones, man, sometimes they don't get the attention they deserve. Yeah. Well, let's get into the idea of church planting and how church planting has been for you in Boaz, Alabama. I guess I know you kind of gave us how you ended up planting a church in Boaz. What was the process you had to go through? Because if I'm not mistaken, you're part of the Southern Baptist Convention.
Correct.
And so you went through that denomination, and like you said, you have a church that is supporting y'all as well. So what is the process that you had to go through to be able to start the church?
All right, what I'll do is I'll pick up our story after we moved here and kind of tell you how we got to where we are as a church. I kind of got you where I was as a person, but I'll get you there as a church where we're at now. So after Chuck and I had met in our house, he was pastoring a church in Gadsden, a pretty good sized church. I think I had 300 or 400 people in attendance there. And so he had been pastoring there for a while and just was kind of ministers who've been at churches sometimes start feeling God calling them to something else. And he had been kind of feeling that for a little bit, but they'd been looking at potentially starting a kind of like a north campus for their church up here in Boaz. Boaz is the northern part of Etowah. Well, it's technically in Marshall County, but where I live is on the border between Etowah County and Marshall County. So this is really the northernmost part of Etowah County where I live. And so they had started looking at potentially planting a church up in this area. And so that he and I had started talking that way of planting a church or planting a satellite campus through their church where he was at. And so we had looked actually at a building just less than a mile from my house on the major road here. And it had once been the ABC store here in town. So it still had ABC across the top of it as this blue and white building. We looked at it two or three different times. The second time we went in there, we actually found the floor plan and where we had looked at putting where the preacher would preach each week was actually where all the rum would have been stacked during the ABC store whenever it was going. So we had this like really cool idea of like redeeming something that Satan had for so long and redeeming it for God's glory and for the kingdom. And so we've been looking at this place, and that kind of fell through for us. But Chuck, that same time, God really worked on him, and he stepped away from that church with no ministry to go to. He just felt like God called him away from it. And so he stepped away from that church. And so he and I started planning our church, which is Kingdom Church. We started thinking about what would that look like. And so we started making some contacts in the area, some friends that he had from a long time and some people I knew. And so we kind of talked a little bit and we started just meeting in a Bible study. We had a contact at Snead State Community College. And so we started meeting on campus just in a Bible study setting. To begin with, there's about 8 of us, maybe 10. I think there was 8 at our first service. And we met the Sunday after Easter, 2016 was our first Sunday that we met as a Bible study. It was pretty informal. Like I said, there's only like 8 or 10 of us. But it was really just a Bible study. But we had the hopes of planting a church. After the ABC store fell through, we started meeting as a Bible study. We started thinking, well, if we're going to do this the right way, if we're going to actually plant a church, let's look at a launch date. We're actually going to start. So we set the launch date as September 11th, 2016. And we needed to find another location. And so we'd found this storefront here in Boaz, and the first time we met in that storefront, we were at capacity of the storefront. So it was kind of a, it was really one of the only places we had. It was a good price, but the first Sunday we were there, we were almost full. We had, I think, 55 in attendance our first Sunday. And so we knew that wasn't going to work long-term, and it ended up through a long story I'm not going to get into. It was kind of a stressful situation. We weren't even able to stay there anyway due to fire code, and it was this big ordeal, and the Lord kind of moved us out of there. And now we're at Snead State in their auditorium at Snead. And so it's been a good spot for us. It's kind of too big for us. It probably holds 350 or 400 people, and there's 30 to 50 of us each week. So it's kind of engulfs us each week, but it's still a great price, great location. And so as we had moved back to Snead, we started working with the Southern Baptist, with Alsbaum, which is the Alabama Southern Baptist ministry here in the state, and with Lamar Duke, who's heading up their church planting. And we started going through the process of becoming an official church plant. So Sydney and I became official church state Alabama Baptist church planters. We had to go through the interview process to do that. And once we got accepted there, we went into the training. So me and Chuck went through the training seminar, which is like a Thursday to Saturday type deal. So we did the training with them. And then we have been going to a coaching network once a month, which is kind of a training, also kind of keeping up with other pastors doing the same things we're doing. And so that's all helped us get state funding through the Baptist as well. There's money out there that the state provides to help church plants. They help with a startup grant to help buy sound equipment and all that kind of stuff. And we were able to get that. We were able to get monthly support. It happens for 2 years. They help us with our rent. They help us with congregational assistance. So that's been this absolutely incredible thing that our state offers. I don't know of any other states that are offering what our state offers. And Lamar has been doing a phenomenal job at the state level, helping organize all that. And it's been great to work with him, great training. We've got a sponsor church, which is Willow Street Baptist Church in Scottsboro. We also are supported some financially by Grace Baptist Church up in Newcastle, Virginia. So those are kind of our processes we went through. We have a sponsor church, and we've had to go through the training and through the monthly seminars through the state to become an official church plant through the Alabama Baptist. And we've got to a point now where our high point's been mid-50s. The summer, our church has been kind of struggling through the summer, been 20 to 30 people each week. But it's been a very good ministry. Been going about a year and a half. We'll come on our official one-year anniversary in September. Hopefully have a good celebration for our one-year celebration. But the first year has been, it's been up and down, but it's been very, very good, the impact that we're able to have for the kingdom just in our small area.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I've been through the network you're talking about, and man, I'm excited about what they're doing for church planting. Lamar Duke does an amazing job, and man, I found, I don't know if you deal with this or not, but I found that so many people don't understand the idea of church planting in Alabama. Either they don't support it because they think we have too many churches already, or they don't understand the idea of planting churches in general. So,
they're doing an amazing job. Is the way people plant churches here is they get mad at one church and then they go start their own, or a church will split and that's how it started. It's kind of like, no, that's not what our church plan is. We're not split off any other church. We didn't get mad and leave. It's an intentional thing that we've done to plant a new ministry in this area.
Unfortunately, that is true about how most churches start. I actually know of a church around the area where I'm at. It's a few counties over. I remember looking at their history. They split because they got an argument of where they wanted the new church building to be that they were about to build. And so they split, and the church got up and going, and they actually ended up being like two blocks from each other. And so it's ridiculous sometimes.
Man, that's crazy.
That is not a good model of church planning, of course.
No, that's not the one that they want you to do.
Oh, no, they do an amazing job with it. Well, what are some difficulties that you face in church planning? Because correct me if I'm wrong, when you're telling me the story of how you got started, you really started with a small group and you launch the church out of that, where a lot of people in Alabama or in general that plant churches, they end up doing like a large launch where they gather a bunch of people and then launch from that. And so your style is kind of unique compared to some of the ones I've heard of. So what are some difficulties that's really come out of that?
Yeah, you know, launching large is, I think that would have been a good idea. What happened with us is we had a group of people who wanted to meet now. Like we had a group of, ended up being closer to 20 that were like, hey, we don't have anywhere to really meeting regularly. What are y'all doing? And so it's like, okay, I guess we're going to start a service. And so we just went ahead and started that way and then kind of launched later, kind of bigger push towards that launching model. And so we kind of did it that way, it, just out of need, out of necessity to do that. And it's worked fine. I haven't seen any difficulties out of that. But our number one problem has been finding somebody to consistently lead worship for us. I'm not musically talented. Chuck can sing fairly well, but he can't play any instruments really. He plays the trumpet, but he can't, doesn't play like guitar or like lead worship formally like that. And so when we first were doing services, it's kind of like a small group type deal. We would play music up on the screen or we'd have somebody come every now and then as they could to lead worship. But by the time we launched, we had hired a lady named Angela who did an absolutely phenomenal job for us. It was her and her husband, and then they have four children, and her children helped her lead worship. And she did a really, really good job for us. But this past May, she had stepped down from leading worship for us. So she led for 9 or 10 months, and it was very nice to have somebody there all the time. She'd done a great job for us. But when she stepped down in May, we've been kind of scrambling since then, because now it's more than just a small group. Like we've got weekly services rolling. And so it's been hard. We've had one young lady filled in for us for a couple weeks. We've had some other people kind of hit and miss coming in here, 1 week here, 1 week there. But in the weeks where we haven't had anybody, we haven't had anyone the last 2 weeks, and it's been us having to play music on the screen and sing that way, which it isn't terrible, but it's not ideal either. It's not what people look for. People expect somebody to be up there leading worship, or there to be a choir, or if there's not a choir, there to be a band or somebody leading with a guitar. And so it's been very difficult for us just to find somebody to consistently lead worship. Our area being small, anybody who is musically talented is just gobbled up. I mean, they're in a ministry already. And if I hate to think of it like this, but if they're quote unquote on the market for looking for a church, they are taken out real quick by somebody because there's such a need for talented musicians in the churches. And it's just very, very difficult for us to find someone.
How many colleges are new, y'all?
Not many. We have Sneed State, which is right here in town, which is where we meet. But their music program is very like formal music. And we've asked, this is honest, I'm not even making this up. We asked them if they would have anybody to lead contemporary worship. And they asked what was contemporary worship. So when they had to ask the question, what's contemporary worship? It's kind of like, yeah, this isn't going to, I don't think we're going to find anybody here. And then the next nearest one is Gadsden State, which is down in Gadsden. And then Jacksonville State is probably 45 minutes to an hour. And we've looked through some of those places, but we're still not having a whole lot of luck.
As we've talked off air, man, I know that struggle so true. So I definitely know how that can be difficult. And, man, it does. It creates a different environment when you – able to have someone live doing music and leading it rather than on the screen. And I don't know, there's something different about it that just seems a lot better. But yeah. That's okay. I can still use y'all in the other. But I know it does make it a little difficult. And I know for me, and I know this may sound weird, but it actually helped my preaching whenever we had somebody live. At my church, I'm the more of the technology person. And so I was worried about if the songs were going to play right or anything like that. And so when we finally got somebody to lead, it kind of took that burden off my shoulder of worrying about that to where I could just focus on preaching that morning. So, well, let's not be so negative and let's talk about some of the good things that you've kind of seen in church planning and just since you've been there and just some positives that you want to tell everybody about.
Yeah, it's just been really good. And I've told you that our number hasn't been just a huge number of people, but it's been really impactful. And here's why. We have the overhead of our church, just overhead ministry expenses, are very, very low. Chuck works somewhere else. His wife works. We're able to pay him a little bit. But I work full time somewhere else, so we're not having to pay staff full time. We're renting a space each week for a very low price. We're not having any overhead as far as electricity, water, internet, any of that kind of stuff. And so our overhead's been very, very low. So the money that our people have been giving literally is going straight to ministry. Last year in the first year in our church, but in 2016, we gave away almost half of the money we took in. So as far as giving to other mission projects, helping people locally in our community, supporting missions, we're able to give away almost half of what we took in. And so I don't know of any other church I've ever worked for, been a part of, that is able to give away half of what they take in. And so that's been just an incredible thing to see how freeing it has been monetarily, because we don't have a lot of people, but we're able to be very impactful because we have very little overhead with our ministry, which I love about that. For instance, we were able to, there's a pastor down in Nicaragua that Chuck had met on a mission trip last year, who his wife has cancer, and they live way out of town, and the only hospital is several hours away, even by car, let alone walking or taking the bus or something like that. And so they didn't have a vehicle. And there had been several nights where she was so sick, battling her cancer, where she was laying in the floor thinking she was going to die, but there was no transportation to get her to a hospital. Like, she literally just had to lay on the floor and beg and pray that God would save her and get her to the next day so she could get to the doctor. And so when Chuck heard them say that, it just broke his heart of what was going on there. And so this past summer, just back in May, we were able to take money raised by our church, and some other people had kicked in some money as well. But we were able to go to Nicaragua and buy him a truck. Like, Chuck went down there, they went together, bought a truck, put new tires on it, got it serviced, and we gave him that truck as our church gift to them. And so, I mean, that's incredible kind of kingdom impact of a pastor that nobody here knows, that has just been down there ministering and planning and doing Bible studies and really helping his community. And we were able to help him in a way that I don't know that we could have maybe done as an established church. We had a lot of overhead. We were able to raise that money pretty quickly and do that. So that's a cool ministry aspect of church planting, is just it's missions minded from the beginning. You're not having to convert people to think outside of their church. We've done it from the beginning, is think about other things than just the people here and just people in our community. And that's been phenomenal. I know most church planters probably complain about money and not having any, but it's been really nice for us. It's been very freeing to not have a ton of overhead. We can just use that money straight for ministry.
Dude, that's amazing. I mean, that is true. Most churches that are established, they have to worry about, you know, surviving a lot of times and making sure they keep enough money in for operational to operate. And with y'all having a low overhead, that frees you up a lot. And man, I couldn't imagine what that would feel like as a pastor to be able to support that minister down there in their difficulty. It probably, in my mind, it would have made everything worth it just in that one moment.
It has. I told our people that the other day at church, because, I mean, when you go through the summertime, I know all these churches, especially in June and July, I mean, you hit these dips where everybody's on vacation and nobody seems to be at church. And I was just telling people, like, look, this isn't the way it is. We're not closing doors or nothing, but if it closed today, what we've been able to do just in the pastor, his name's Pastor Leo, just in Pastor Leo's life has been worth it to me. We went through all of this just to be able to impact them. It's worth it to me. And I take that attitude that if God's called us to this, whatever comes out of it like that, it's been worth it. If we're able to impact that one life and help that one family and help them to be able to grow their ministry there, it's all worth it.
Well, man, we're getting close to the... well, we've already passed our normal time, but that's okay. It's been a good conversation. I've enjoyed it so far. But I got one last question, and then we'll get into the plug of the week. And then we'll let you tell everybody how to get in touch with you if they got any questions for you, or, you know, if they want to send y'all's church some money and support y'all, however they want to do that. Okay. But like I said earlier, a lot of people really don't understand why we church plant, why we do this. And so... if you could say one thing to anyone that's wondering about church planning or maybe against it in such a high populated area of churches, what would you say to them?
you know, this is the thing we get all the time asked is, why do we need another church? Why do we need another church in this area? I mean, there's dozens of them in our area. Why do we need more? Why do we need more? I looked at the stats before I moved here, and within 10 miles of where our church is, there's about 50,000 people. And the raw stats say that 50% of those say they do not go to church. So we're still talking 25,000 people in our area are not churched. And so my answer is because there's still more ministry to be done. Like, there's still more to be done. And so when people ask about why church planting, it's because we need more people out there working. We need more things going on out there to help people. Just another opportunity. We tried to plant our church to look different than other churches here, not because what First Baptist is doing is wrong or because of what the Methodist Church is doing wrong, not because of that. It's just because we're trying to give another outlet, another look for people that may be interested in church. Maybe our method will be the way that they like versus the other ones. Some other people are going to like the other church better. Some are going to like ours better, whatever. We just know that there's lost people out there. There's 25,000 people within 10 miles of us that we know of that are saying, I don't go to church. And so we're out there to try to reach them. There's still tons of work to be done. And so I think it's a very good reason to church plant is because there's so many lost people still out there.
That's right. I mean, if you look at I forgot what website it's on, and if I can find it before we air this, I'll put it in the show notes. But it gives us a stat of the unchurched areas in Alabama alone. And I remember the first time I looked at that, and you may have seen it as well. But first time I looked at that, man, pretty much every county in Alabama had one city in it that was unchurched. Most counties had more than most of their cities were unchurched. And really, I got to studying what that meant. And it really wasn't a black and white questions they would ask, but they would ask questions really, you know, it was just a simple question of, do you hold to any religious affiliation? And that was people saying no to that. We're just going to be realistic that possibilities of that number being even higher is there. I know I didn't plan on asking you this, so maybe I'm throwing you for a loop here. but if you could say one thing to someone that is kind of feeling a tug to go into church planting, or maybe they're in Alabama, they're thinking about planting in small town Alabama, what would you say to them?
I would say just keep praying about it and be patient. As I told you, my story with church planting started probably 5 or 6 years ago before I was married. So it was at least 6 years ago that God had started tugging on my heart about it. And so I just be patient, pray about it and be patient, because things don't always happen very quickly in ministry. It just, sometimes you got to be patient and wait on God to put you in the right spot at the right time, which he did with us. 6 years ago, we had the idea, just kind of a thought, almost like a dream of it. And then once God started rolling it, it happened pretty quickly. But just be patient, pray about it, don't jump into anything real quick, but wait on God's timing with it.
Well, man, let's move into the last part of the podcast. And do you have a plug of the week that you'd like to give?
I do. All right. I've already mentioned my dad before, so I'm going to plug my dad. He has written a book it was published less than a year ago. It is called 30 Days to Genesis, and it is a devotional book, 30 straight days. You can read through the book as a devotion day by day, a couple pages for each devotion, each day that you read through, and it works through the book of Genesis. And there's several of these books. There's 30 Days to Jeremiah, which is by Dr. Gary Yates. And there's several more. Dwayne Milioni in North Carolina has written one. Dr. Doug Mutton out in St. Louis area has written one. They're kind of doing several of these, but my dad's is 30 Days to Genesis. So starting right there at the beginning, it's a very easy read. It's a great devotion. I know some churches that are doing a study through that as a church, reading through them kind of as a church, reading day by day, and then on Sunday preaching a sermon from that week before. I know of a couple of different spouses that are reading through those this morning devotions, which is what me and my wife had done. And then, as individuals, people are reading through them. So it's a great devotion, an easy read. My dad is very, very practical. He was in ministry for a long time. All of these guys who wrote them are not just some theologian that sits up there in their ivory tower and writes about stuff. These are all actual ministers that are pastoring churches, preaching weekly. And so they're very good, well done, high academic, but also very relational type book. So my dad's is Dr. Chet Roden, and it is 30 Days to Genesis.
Awesome, man. I may have to look into that myself. Starting in August, what we're going to do as a church is I'm going to, one Wednesday night, doing our Bible study, I'm going to give an overview of a book and then have a 30-day reading plan for it. And the first one we're doing is actually Genesis, and we're going to start that about the 15th or 17th of August, I think. So I have to try to get that on, get my hands on that before then, and something I can recommend to the congregation as we go through that.
So they have them on Amazon. Awesome. So they're selling them all on Amazon. So you can hop over there. I think one of the newest ones is the Jeremiah one, but my dad's been out about a year. So you can get those on Amazon.
I'll have to get you to send me a link to that. That way I can put it in the show notes. You got any more plugs? Okay. Is that the only one you want to give this time?
I'll give one more because they are my employer and because I got my MDiv there and absolutely love it. It's Liberty University. They have a great seminary. I've developed a lot of their seminary courses, and I don't say that to brag about me, but I say that to brag about our faculty, that they're incredible at the seminary level at Liberty. They have a great online program. Guys, if you're looking to go, and girls, but I was thinking ministers, particularly pastors, if you're looking to go back to school, Liberty offers a great online way to do that, and it's very, very affordable, especially if you're a Southern Baptist minister or Southern Baptist church member. It's very affordable to go back and get your master's, your MDiv. Took me about 3 years. You can do it all online. But it was a great program, and the professors are just top-notch quality. And you can do it from the comfort of your own living room, sitting in your boxers and T-shirt in front of the TV doing your schoolwork. And so it's I love Liberty. Been there a long time, and just I think it's a great – I know what they stand for. They're very conservative, very, very biblically based, just a great university.
Awesome. Well, the plug of my week kind of goes with the two that you've given, and it's actually a book you mentioned at the very beginning. It's called Disciple Making Is, How to Live the Great Commission with Passions and Confidence by Dave Early and Rod Dimsey. Me and you actually talked about this book. I guess it was back at the end of May, 1st of June. And it's a book I had to read for my class, for my seminary through New Orleans. And man, it is a fantastic book and resource to read through, especially on the topic of disciple making. And one thing I loved about the book, and I know I've probably talked about this book already on the podcast, but it's a very practical book, but they're not trying to reinvent the wheel in this book. They're really just presenting information, and you see that they quote tons of resources that they get a lot of their information from. And so I love this book. It's not a new book in the sense of any new magic bullet or anything like that. But it's a great resource for someone trying to make disciples.
Let me tell you something about those two guys. Yeah, let me tell you something about those two guys as well. I already mentioned Dr. Early planning the church out in Vegas, but these two guys, I've worked closely with them developing classes at Liberty, and they're both phenomenal guys. They're very, very intelligent, very smart, but extremely practical in their ministry approaches as well. They've planted churches, they've served on staff at existing churches, as pastors, as support members. And so they have just years and years of personal experience to bring to the table. And they are just great, great people that Lord's used in really, really mighty ways. So I would encourage that book. There's a whole series. I think there's Worship Is, Evangelism Is, Discipleship Is. I think they came out with Small Groups Is. Don't hold me to that, or they might be in the process of that. But that series of books has been very good, and they're written by just top-notch people.
Ooh, they got one called Pastoral Leadership Is.
I didn't know they had that one. Yeah, I'll have to look at that one.
And then they have one called Ministry Is. So I'll have to look at that Pastoral Leadership one. I bet that one would be a great book. Well, man, I've enjoyed the conversation. I hope you've enjoyed it. We're glad that you got to be on the podcast with us. And to be honest with you, man, we may be getting up with you again at some point in the future of the podcast and doing another maybe just have a conversation with you about some topic, and instead of like an interview format, just talk to you, talk about ministry together. But just in case anybody wants to get up with you and talk to you about your church plan or ask you questions about anything, what's some ways they can get up with you on social media or anything like that?
All right, we'll give you three ways. Our church info, you can go to www.kingdomchurchboaz.com. So kingdomchurchboaz.com. That has a link to our church Twitter, our church Facebook, along with our website where our times are, our locations, how to give to us if you want to help support us as well. My personal contact on social media at Twitter is at jroden33. Roden is R-O-D-E-N, so it's J-R-O-D-E-N 33. And then Instagram is another one, and it's at J-C Roden, so J-C-R-O-D-E-N. And so both of those are good ways to follow me and keep up with what's going on or contact me if you need to do it that way.
I'm looking at your website now, man. It's pretty legit. Who ended up doing the website for you?
Yeah, I did it. I wasn't going to say that. But yeah, I did our website. I've done graphic design, video editing, website design, that sort of stuff in the past as well. So did it through Squarespace. As church planners, Squarespace makes it so easy to do everything. It's pretty cheap too, like $10 a month. But it was a great resource to use to get our church website out there.
Man, I was about to tell everybody that you did you've done some logos and stuff in the past. I've seen some that you did for Tony's D Nows over the past. And, man, he does good work. If y'all just want to holler at him, maybe he'll charge you a little fee and he can make stuff for you. But, man, I've enjoyed it, and I hope you have too. Is there anything you want to say before we get off of here?
No, man, I enjoyed it. Glad to be on the show. If you want me back, let me know. And just ask everybody to pray for us and pray for our ministry that we're doing here in Boaz, that God blesses it and blesses our people in our area, because we really do want to see a revival in the area. We got so many lost people out there and just difficulties, and we want to see those people reach for the Lord.
Man, we'll be praying for you, and I'll try to get my church to be praying for you as we do our monthly prayer list. Just excited about what God's doing through Boaz, and I just want to encourage you and all of the other ministers that's maybe listening, man, just be faithful to the ministry that God's called you to. He's called you there. He will deliver you. He will help you. He will guide you in all of it.
If you're encouraged by what you hear, please go like our Facebook page, share the episodes, and rate the podcast on iTunes. Don't forget that a new episode drops every first and third Mondays. Our prayer is that these episodes are an encouragement to you and that you would be faithful in the ministry that God has placed you in.